This next case is case number 73024, Scharholt versus Gangwish. I hope I'm not mispronouncing the appellant's name.
That sounds correct to me, Your Honor.
Are you prepared to proceed?
Yes.
Please let us know if you want to reserve time for rebuttal and come forward.
Ready to proceed. May it please the court. The opportunity that this court has with issuing an opinion in this case is the opportunity to impose equal standards for all custody modification reviews and the opportunity to address how the 2015 legislative changes to NRS 125 affect not just initial custody determinations, but any custody determination. There are problems on the face of the order denying the motion to modify custody. That's the issue here. As in this case where you have a two-sentence finding on a motion to modify custody, there is some low-hanging fruit as to why procedural defects in the order require it to be reversed. There are no findings of fact, which violates NRS 125C.00353A and 4. And there are no findings regarding the child's best interest at all. Both of these deficiencies require reversal. Beyond the procedural deficiencies, however, are abuses of discretion. There were numerous changes of circumstances affecting the welfare of the child since the last order, and compelling and unrefuted reasons supporting why joint physical custody would be in the child's best interest. The concern that Mr. Scharholt carries with him at this juncture is that the court merely reverses and remands based on the procedural deficiencies. He requests that this court address the abuses of discretion and that they receive equal attention. We're also asking for attention to the new legislative changes and their effects on custody modifications. We are in need of case law establishing that modifications of custody receive the same newly codified preferences and presumptions that NRS 125C imposes in any custody determination. These include the preference for joint physical custody found in NRS 125C.00251 and presumption that joint physical custody is in the child's best interest if a parent is able to adequately care for the child at least 146 days of the year. And that is found in NRS 125C.00031A. There are other statutory presumptions historically found in NRS 125 that carry throughout a custody case, such as a presumption against joint physical custody if a parent has been the perpetrator of domestic violence or has kidnapped a child. The new presumptions and preferences should likewise be imposed during any custody determination, including modifications of custody. The new legislative language does not limit itself to only initial custody determinations, but states in any action for determining physical custody of a minor child, the sole consideration of the court is the best interest of the child, and then goes on to state the best interest factors. It's also time to review case law created before the 2015 legislative changes. The conundrum which Judge Russell, in this case, articulated quite well at the hearing is the substantial change of circumstances prong imposed by the case law found in Ellis v. Carucci that is imposed only when modifying primary physical custody orders and requires a parent to first prove that there's been a substantial change in circumstances affecting the welfare of the child, and secondly, that a modification would be in the best interest of the child. This two-prong burden puts an additional factor for consideration before the child's best interest is ever analyzed. That alone seems to fly in the face of the statutory language requiring that the sole consideration of the court is the best interest of the child. The substantial change in circumstances prong has morphed throughout case law history, and its purpose is succinctly stated in a recent advanced opinion of Nance v. Ferraro, which summarizes that this substantial change in circumstances requirement is itself derived from res judicata principles.
Ms. Bittner?
Yes.
I wanted to raise a question with you about whether it is appropriate in this appeal to raise the 2015 statutory amendment conundrum when the argument wasn't raised below, nor decided by Judge Russell in his order. Was this raised below, and if so, where and how?
Yes, Your Honor. We addressed that in the reply that is on file. Trial counsel had stated...
In the reply to what? You talking about the reply in the district court, or are you talking about the reply up here?
Oh, no, Your Honor. I'm sorry. I misstated that. The trial court, the issue was addressed by trial counsel in the record, and I can grab the reference if you like, but the trial counsel did state that with the preference for joint physical custody that currently exists under the new legislation, that she believed that that should apply. She did state that in the trial itself. And Judge Russell responded to that as well. I don't have the exact site in the transcript where they discussed that issue, but
I don't want to take up your time, but I would ask that you provide the clerk with a record site to where this was discussed.
Yes.
But it is not resolved in Judge Russell's order.
No, nothing is addressed in Judge Russell's order other than it's denied.
I have a different question. Are you done with that line of questioning?
Yes, because I was trying to, you were headed in your argument, in essence, to assume, essentially, that 215 applied.
Yes.
But there is a serious question, at least from our review of the record, as to whether it was properly preserved below.
Yes, Your Honor, and I also had that concern when I had read the response to the fast-track statement, and so I recall looking it up and finding that, and so I can provide it to the court. Where trial counsel did state that the new preferences of joint legal custody under the 2015 changes should apply.
All right.
I want to switch a bit. I'm at a loss to understand how your client could ever demonstrate sufficient changed circumstances. If not on this record, then what could be shown? Implicit in that question is we don't or the record doesn't clearly demonstrate why there was an initial award of primary physical with visitation in dad. And so you're measuring changed circumstances against an unknown. And I get that a negative change in mom's mothering abilities or parenting abilities would constitute a changed circumstance, thinking about this, because that would be disqualifying from primary physical if there were some, rampant drug addiction or something like that going on. And I'm not saying this record suggests that. But if there were something like that, I could see changed circumstances. Dad could come in and get that changed. But Judge Russell muses, this is an unusual case. Dad has moved to be closer. Dad and the child have a closer relationship than they did before. Mom and dad are getting on in a way they didn't before, and things are much better. And then he expresses a concern about changing anything because it might make things worse somehow. But to me, it's just applying principles of res judicata or issue and claim preclusion. I don't know exactly how well that fits here when you don't have a predicate finding of what it was that led to the initial primary mom, visitation, dad. Long way around to tell me what the record shows was the reason for the original award.
There was no reason given, Your Honor, and that is one of the reasons why I cited the entire record to reiterate the fact that there had never been a finding regarding the child's best interests in the entire record.
Yeah, I couldn't find it either. And when you don't have that, independent of 2015, so that changed circumstances becomes, you're pushing against something that's an unknown. I don't know how that doctrine can apply there if there's an initial flawed determination, except in situations where the primary physical custodian has unraveled or is no longer capable of caring for the child, that would be easy. But other than that, then you're limiting...
Well, that is one of the procedural defects that we allege, because there is no basis for comparison. And since there were no prior findings, and there were no findings in this case, there is an abuse of discretion, because there's nothing for this court to measure and say, how have circumstances changed?
The argument, pushback argument is, well, he should have appealed from the initial award for being inadequate in the first place, and the failure to do so is preclusive now. Could you comment on that?
I agree that that is an argument that he has waived at this point. And I think that every single custody determination is subject to appellate review, and therefore the procedural deficiencies alone create a reversal, an opportunity for reversal.
You didn't reserve time, but I assume you would like to. You have 4 minutes and 40 seconds left, so it's up to you how you want to divide your time. But that
yes,
was...
I would like to reserve.
Okay. Very well. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. And may it please the court, my name is Thomas Levine and I represent Respondent Amanda Gangwish. This case before the court comes from a lower court ruling from a judge who had heard 10 previous motions to modify and change child custody before his court. In his findings on the record, while not written, he stated that he did not see that there would be a reason to change the current child custody arrangement because he believed it would be detrimental to the child. Furthermore, after repeatedly asking appellant to give additional reason why he should be granted a change or modification to the current child custody award, he was unable to convince the judge and provide a substantial change in circumstances as to the welfare of the child.
What was the reason for the original primary physical in mom and visitation and dad award? What does the record show on that?
Your Honor, the record is fairly unclear on that. I was not the attorney who argued any of the previous district court hearings. And I would note that previous custody determination awards are normally not used in determining the current, whether a modification is appropriate. For example, McGonigal versus McGonigal points to that issue.
Well, but then how would you get to demonstrate changed circumstances if you're not doing it referentially?
Your Honor, I agree that's a major procedural problem with Judge Rushell's final order. And it's the reason that we seek remand specifically to address and add factual findings. However, the argument for respondent would be that appellant has failed to reserve that argument to appeal and should have appealed each time there was not a alleged finding of factual circumstances. While that's troubling and problematic, that's the appellant's duty to reserve. If you wish to see a substantial change in circumstances, Judge Rushell is the judge who's heard the past 10 hearings in the last 4 years determining whether there's a substantial change in circumstances. And so it's his discretion to determine that, and it's his duty as the district court as he finds
it. What does that standard mean, substantial change in circumstances? And why doesn't the father's move from, I forget the names of the towns, but one town to another, he now lives in the same town where the child lives, and he's spending more time with the child, and the parents are getting along better, and so on. Those are all positive changes. So why would that not amount to substantial change in circumstances for purposes of at least proceeding to a best interest of the child determination under Ellis?
Your Honor, I would look at the origin of the standard is in Ellis versus Carucci, which points to the rationale for the standard is so that there's not a repeated filing of motions, so that any minute factual change leads to repeated hearings in front of the judiciary so that you don't have someone continuing to file and file and file until they get the exact right judge, even with minor changes in fact. Some substantial change in circumstances that have been before this court before are examples of private school versus public school where the private school is religious. Another example would be in a substantial change in circumstances is a modification to allow the child to travel to Africa, including several countries that were not on the Hague list. There was analysis in those cases, specifically Davis versus Wellflow, about whether there was substantial change in circumstances.
No, the Davis case was an initial award, and what was being faulted was the failure to articulate a basis for the limited custody or visitation awarded, because
Correct.
It didn't give you a baseline measure against which to assess future change circumstances.
Correct, Your Honor.
And that's the problem we have in this case.
Correct, Your Honor.
And I mean, do we want law that says it's not changed circumstances when dad no longer lives so far away that it's a burden on the child to have to go back and forth, and where dad is seeing the kid more and their parents are getting along better? When all of those changes have been made, why would that not be something that gets them in the door? And I appreciate the need to cut down on serial motion practice.
Yes. Your Honor, I would go to the fact that this judge has heard 10 different hearings on a number
of issues. But he said there was no, he didn't fault him as a vexatious litigant, or he didn't fault his motives at all here.
Correct, Your Honor, but motives don't have to do with whether there's been a substantial change in circumstances that specifically affect the child. He provided no evidence that showed that even though he had made some changes, that they had an effect on Chasen. And I think that was most likely the district court's rationale for finding that there was no material change in circumstances. While the Supreme Court has said that substantial change in circumstances can be to the child, to a parent, or to the family unit as a whole, the changes that appellant wishes to use to show that there's been a substantial change in circumstances are his movement, a slightly more secure job schedule, and his citations that there had been improved behavior with Chasen and that the no-contact order had been working. Those may be changes.
Contested, so we accept that as true. That was the only evidence presented.
So Mr. Levine, it sounds like from what you said a few minutes ago that you too would seek a remand so the district court can supply the findings necessary for us to review this matter if it were to be challenged again, because right at the moment we're all speculating a bit as to what circumstances there were originally and how they changed or didn't change. Do you agree with that?
I would agree with that, Your Honor. And, mm-hmm. and it is a major procedural concern because as cited by multiple cases, there has to be a finding, a writing, tying the substantial change in circumstances to the best interest of the child.
Now, however, do you agree, or you seem to raise the fact that the 2015 statutory amendments weren't raised below. Now, do you agree with your opponent here that there was a discussion about those amendments in the record below?
Your Honor, there was a brief mention that there had been some changes to the statute, but there was no analysis requested or provided or any discussion of the legal ramifications and changes of the addition of, for instance, the presumption of joint custody and how it applied to this particular case.
Because, I mean, it makes a big difference. If in Ellis, it's a two-pronged test, and right now we've been having a discussion about whether or not there was changed circumstances, but there's obviously nothing that is contained here about best interests of the child, because under Ellis you wouldn't get to that if the court doesn't consider there to be no changed circumstances.
Your Honor, I would disagree with that there was no finding for best interests of the child. Judge Russell clearly stated that even though there had been these changes, that he didn't see it as in Chasen's best interest for there to be a modification of custody. Well, that's not included in the written order. He repeatedly mentions it on the record, including for the rationale for his denial.
It seems like the written order suffers then on both prongs.
I would agree.
Because I am concerned, I respect your point and your argument, but I'm very concerned about resorting to a transcript where none of that has been extended into these findings either way. And it does seem like the implications surrounding the 2015 statute, if counsel's correctly, and I have no reason to disbelieve her, represents that exchange is something that should have also been vetted. So it sounds like both parties in front of the court today are acknowledging that this case should go back on remand for the court to lay out his decision, set out the findings that are expected under Ellis, under the 2015 amendments, and then determine whether they want to proceed further from there. Do you agree with that?
Your Honor, I would agree with that. And I believe that the remand should be narrow specifically to add those findings of fact and points of law to best interest.
Well, but I'm not clear on looking at this record. And if what could Dad do to demonstrate changed circumstances, hypothetically, in your assessment of this, assuming that nothing horrible has happened to Mom's parenting? How could Dad possibly change this on this record, given the standard that Judge Russell seemed to have applied, which is pretty steep?
Yes, Your Honor. I would look to the fact that it's appellant's burden of proof to prove that. And while there may have been changes, and they may have even been major changes, that he couldn't show how they had actually improved Chasen's well-being. There was numerous discussion on the record about how it had affected Chasen's well-being and whether Chasen's attitude had changed. And the judge seemed to believe...
Chasen, the child?
Correct, Your Honor. Seemed to believe that there hadn't been any change in Chasen's attitude or behavior. And so there hadn't been any circumstances that would lead to needing to amend the custody.
Why didn't Ms. Gangwish testify below?
Your Honor, my understanding, although I was not her trial counsel at the time, was she believed that appellant could not meet his burden of proof to show substantial change in circumstances.
So I want to continue pressing on this. What could Dad do to demonstrate changed circumstances on this record that is within his power to accomplish?
Well, Your Honor, again, I would point to the district court is a better finder of fact than I am, having not argued the initial order. And he has a much better understanding of the case as a whole. The reason we're all struggling with trying to determine what the substantial change in the record is because we don't have any findings of fact to compare them to. And that's the procedural issue that's bedeviled this case since it entered the appellant court, and it's been the issue that we've talked about for most of today. I don't know whether that is an appropriate standard. However, the judge who decided the case has heard 10 previous hearings with this particular set of parents, and he's the one who's in the best position to determine whether the facts have been a substantial change in circumstances.
Well, looking at the transcript, it appears as though he acknowledges the efforts being made by Daniel, but ultimately, it looks like he's saying, I don't think that's enough or in the best interest of Chasen without explaining that. So it's hard to tell whether the decision was made on the basis that there were no changed circumstances or whether it's made on the basis that it's in Chasen's best interest for the current custody relationship to continue, neither of which has been explained outside of comments on the transcript, right?
Correct, Your Honor. The last thing I want to turn briefly to is there was a discussion about from appellant about whether there was a basis for the findings as to the statutory changes and whether the statutory changes were appropriate. And the reason I would bring that up would be appellant doesn't provide any additional standard or method or metric to examine how that joint common presumption should affect Ellis versus Carucci or Rivero versus Rivero, and doesn't provide an alternative standard. She's asking the court, in essence, to decide a new standard, but doesn't provide a basis or a rationale for that standard other than to look at the best interests of the child. As exhaustively discussed in Ellis versus Carucci, the reason for the substantial change in circumstances is because of the principles of res judicata and to avoid unnecessary litigation before this court. The other thing that I would briefly mention is that there was a request that we need to make all of the standards consistent between the various custody arrangements. However, I would argue a case where we don't have factual findings on the record and haven't had factual findings on the record is probably not the case to be changing our existing case law. We would need substantial findings of fact and a rationale and a look at what the best interests of the child to determine whether the new changes under the statute should apply and would apply. And so for so as my final point, Your Honors, I would ask you to reverse, or not reverse, I would ask you to remand specifically for the lower court to address the findings of fact and to address the procedural issues in the order so that there's a clear record of what the findings of fact and what the best interests of the child are. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. You have 4 minutes and 37 seconds.
Before you start, do you agree with what he said?
Do I agree to everything that you said?
No, to the remand. Excuse me.
I think that the remand is going to put us into a cycle of the same problem.
Well, then what's the relief you're seeking?
The relief that we're seeking is that the underlying motion be reversed due to no findings of fact, that the court, that there's a finding that there was an abuse of discretion as to the substantial change in circumstances that were unrefuted and put on the record, and a decision setting forth that as far as Ellis v. Carucci imposes that a substantial change in circumstance must be proven, that be reversed because it is obstructing the focus on the sole interest, the sole focus of the best interest of the child. The foundation of case law that creates Ellis v. Carucci suggests that promoting stability in custody orders is important. However, you don't find that same stability in custodial orders if the parents share joint physical custody. And so this substantial change in circumstance is clouding a focus of the best interests of the child.
So what test would you propose be applied when people bring serial motions to change custodial arrangements?
The principles of res judicata apply no matter what. And so the court can always make a finding that these are not new circumstances since the last custodial order. That is something that applies whether you have joint physical custody or primary physical custody. Imposing the Ellis v. Carucci standard of first considering whether there's been a substantial change in circumstances magnifies the principle of res judicata that applies to either situation. And it is thereby taking the focus away from the best interest of the child. So I'm suggesting that in every custody review, the sole focus should be the best interest of the child.
Well, in Archella and in Gordon versus Geiger, didn't we continue the Ellis versus Carucci two-prong test, notwithstanding the 2015 amendments?
Yes, but that prong was not contested in those cases, as I recall reading those cases.
So what's the standard if the parents have joint physical and somebody wants to change that, what does that movement have to demonstrate?
Solely the best, that it would be in the best interest of the child.
And what is the policy rationale that would distinguish, independent of the 2015 legislation, that distinguishes wanting to change a primary visitation relationship, that has a tougher standard than wanting to change joint custody to?
The case law and the history behind Ellis v. Carucci merely suggest that it was promoting the status quo, that stability was in the best interest of the child. However,
but why wouldn't that apply equally philosophically to joint custody going to primary?
I agree, Your Honor. I think that either it should apply in both situations or just the best interest should apply in both situations.
Yeah, I see your point. You're saying that the 2015 amendments strengthen your argument on that regard?
Correct, Your Honor.
I'm sorry, I spoke over you.
No, that's quite all right.
You may wrap up, or if you wish.
That's all, Your Honor.
Do you have any questions?
No.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the lawyer's advocacy on this case, and the matter will stand submitted.